Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for October 23rd, 2017. This is David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hello, David, and good evening to everybody out there. Yes, tonight we have another special guest on our show, as well as news of interest to veterans across the country. First, I want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. This is the Veterans News Hour, so we want to hear from you veterans. You can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call number is 1-888-627-6008. And now back to David, who will introduce our guest.
Thank you, Richard. Our special guest this evening is Ms. Sid Deeth, a founder and now the executive director of a group based in Tampa, Florida called Marine Families. Marine Families was founded in 2004 to serve military families in the Tampa Bay area, but has since grown to serve families nationally as well as globally. So it is our privilege to have Sid Deeth on our show to talk about the organization and its projects and activities. So without further ado, I welcome her to the Veterans News Hour. How are you tonight, Sid?
Great. Thank you guys so much for having us.
Oh, well, it's our pleasure. So we have lots to talk about, including the history and the mission of the Marine Families Organization, as well as its current projects. Could you please start, if you would, by telling us how you got involved in starting this organization?
Well, that's a story I love to tell, so that's no problem. My son joined the Marine Corps after graduating from high school in 2003, and although I'm married to a veteran and have a long family of service members, I had no idea what I was getting into, except for the fact that I knew that with everything that was going on at the time, my son was probably going to war. So I was nervous, and my first thing to do was go online and start searching for others who might be in the same a situation I was in. I ended up in a family forum where a few of us from the same area found each other, and we met for coffee and all decided that we needed each other or we weren't going to make it through this very hard time back then when the war was just getting started. And from that coffee night and gathering, we have just grown over the years into an incredible nonprofit organization reaching out to support families all over the globe.
Well, that's great, and I understand you were starting in Tampa. What size of Marine Corps family and unit were you starting with back in the early days?
When we first started, we had seven newbies that we called ourselves, and we all got together about a month later. It grew, it doubled, and then over the years, it just continued to grow. We at our largest, probably on a monthly gathering, we'd have up to 100 and 125 people at an event.
Wow.
But now, well, now we, everything is so social media these days, but we have about a 30,000 member following on social media and have a great set of contacts and outreach all over the United States and beyond.
Well, that's super. Tell us more, if you could, about what was what it was like back in 2003, 2004? You know, I know after 9/11, the country first was very supportive of going to war in Afghanistan, and then in March of 2003, there was the more controversial invasion of Iraq. And you said that your son was in the Marine Corps, and then he deployed at some point. Can you tell us more from your perspective and the perspective of other members of your group, the Marine Families, what life was like during that time frame?
I'll be the first one to admit it was rough. And it was only us all banding together that really got each other through it. Several of us suffered, either our sons getting injured, we had loss in our group. So there was a lot for us to learn and a lot to go through. Very scary times. It was wonderful being able to pick up the phone and call another member and know that somebody had your back and they were going to be able to support you and that they knew exactly what you were going through. I think that was the key thing. And one of the phrases we like to tell our members when they join is that we truly feel that this journey is not meant to walk alone. Because a lot of them come in and they don't know. Their kids have joined out of high school or just out of the clear blue. And some of them have no military background, so you don't know what you're up against. And in those early days when the war was very heavy and many of us wouldn't hear from our sons or daughters for weeks and weeks and weeks, if we had not had each other, it would have been much, much rougher to get through those days.
Wow. I know Richard Hurley has some questions. Rick, if you want to go ahead.
Yes, Sid, I was just wondering, in the early stages of the of your group, what kind of activities did you have available and sponsored?
Well, when we first started out, it was more kind of like a once-a-month potluck. We'd just all get together. We'd all bring a dish to share. We'd each meet at somebody else's house so that we would kind of, we were more or less trying to reach around in Central Florida. So we'd reach out to different communities and we'd ask someone to host and we'd meet at their house and we'd all get together and we'd do what we like to call our roundtable roll call, and each person would introduce themselves and who their military loved one was, and we'd tell a little about what was going on right then and there and where they were at and what was going on. And it gave us each a sense of learning about each other and just bonding more and really becoming what we like to call ourselves, family. We are and continue to be a true family, even with many of us that our boys are veterans and have been out for several years now, still have those same people, very active in it, you know, still connected. And just it grows on you, and you want to be a part, and there's so much knowledge to share, and that's so, it's such an advantage for the newer members who are sending their sons or daughters out on first deployments and something. And it's really good to be able to share with them and let them know that we walked that walk, and we know what it was like, and we're there to support them.
Wow. And, Sid, I understand that, you know, as time went on, that you, your group, started engaging in other activities and special projects. Can you give us some idea of what those included?
Well, we tended to be a very eclectic group for a long time, and I used to be frustrated because I felt like we never quite had a niche like everybody else did. But we like to also say that we feel, because we're a smaller organization, we would fill a lot of the gaps that the big organizations didn't. So there was a lot of things we would do. We'd pick up plane fares. We'd coordinate a travel. We'd help with people in the hospital. We'd go visit our wounded here at the James Haley in Tampa. There were just a lot of different things. We'd make blankets. We'd do care packages. We'd find all kinds of crazy things I'd come up with, and the group just loved it. The more they could work and the more hands-on, they really enjoyed. But a few years back, we kind of stumbled onto, I had a wife, I think at the time she was stationed in Okinawa. She contacted me and she said, my husband's on his, I think it was second deployment, and she said, and I'd like this yellow ribbon I've seen online, but right now I just don't have the funds to spare. And I said, oh, no problem. I said, what if we get it for you and we personalize it for you? And she said, oh, that'd be great. So I went ahead and did it, and I sent it to her, and it really didn't cross my mind much. We just did it. It was something we did. We did it for a couple other people, and that was it. Well, about 2 years ago, she contacted us, and she said, hey, she goes, do you remember when you made me that ribbon? I said, you know, I sure do. She goes, you don't know how much it meant to me. She goes, my husband's deploying again, and I wanted to know if you could send me another ribbon. So we posted an article about it, and before we knew it, the request just started pouring in. And so the Yellow Ribbon Project was born. And so now we offer free deployment ribbons to families, it's no charge. They cost us about $5 to make, so we depend solely on donations, which the people are so generous. And what we do is we put on one side of the ribbon, it'll say, until you come home. And then on the other side, it'll be personalized with their last name, their rank, and their branch. And we send it to the families, and they can proudly display them so that their community knows that they're a family that has someone serving abroad.
That yellow ribbon program reminds me of my active duty days during Desert Shield, Desert Storm. I was stationed in North Carolina, a base called Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, and the yellow ribbons became very popular. They were tied around trees, flagpoles, just all over the base, all over the town of Goldsboro, and it really was kind of had a uniting effect. You know, the people were all thinking about our troops that were deployed, and I guess it goes back to the song that Tony Orlando helped make famous, which was Tie a Yellow Ribbon Around the Old Oak Tree. I think, is that right? Does that ring a bell?
Yes, it does. And I'll tell you, that's it. And I'll tell you what, my kids, I have adult children, they love to tease me, especially the girls, because they're very active with the organization. And they said, Mom just refuses to let the yellow ribbon die. And because it meant so much to me. There were two things that I did. Our youngest was 5 years old when our son deployed the first time, and she didn't have a good understanding of what was going on. So every day we would go out to our fence, and we would tie a small yellow ribbon on it, and we would pray for her brother. And so by the time he came home, we had ribbons on every side of our house. They covered all the way down. We had ribbons for every day. And it just meant so much to see them on the cars, to see them hanging, you know, up, and the magnets and the stickers and everything. And it did. It kind of went away. And this is our way of kind of keeping it in there, because I think it is very important, and it does mean a lot. And you'd be surprised the parents that tell us, oh, you know, he's back from deployment, but I'm keeping my ribbon. It's going in our memory box, or I'm going to put it in our scrapbook. It is something that really means something to them, and it did for me. And I really appreciate that we're able to pass that on to other families and show them our support, even as little as it is. It's our way of showing them that we're there for them.
And that support, I think, is very important. If I could digress a bit, you said that in the early days, and even later, I suppose, the organization, when some of our troops that were wounded, they would come home, and they were in the James A. Haley VA Hospital in Tampa. If you wouldn't mind sharing with us what your impressions were of you know, the kind of care, how things were going for those troops, you know, that were in that situation.
You know, it really varies. It really does. Each person has their own personal experience. We've helped families who've had exceptional care and, you know, can't have enough to say wonderful about the VA system and how they were treated. And then you have families that it just doesn't work as well for whatever reasons. There's so many different variables that it's hard to just say it's a great experience, it's a bad experience. Like I said, it is very personal. But I do know that whenever we were there and whenever we were engaged in helping at the hospital or delivering baskets or just visiting our wounded and stuff, it always seemed to be a very good atmosphere. The families were taken care of, beautiful Fisher House there. And, you know, we did everything we could to just assist and help make the stay better.
That's great, yes. And what you said certainly rings true with what I hear. Richard and I represent a lot of veterans, and we have talked to many veterans, some of whom can't praise the VA healthcare system enough, you know. And then there's others that have, as you said, maybe have not had the same sort of positive experience. And I know the VA has invested a lot of resources at the James Haley Hospital Medical Center in Tampa, as well as the one over in St. Petersburg at Bay Pines, and many other clinics in this area as well. Could you share with us as well maybe some of the insights that you could relate to, you know, because the country is still essentially at war. We have troops not only in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and as we just discovered a few weeks ago, much to the surprise of even members of Congress, we had some troops in Africa and the country of Niger, four of whom were tragically killed in an ambush a few weeks ago. I guess my question to you would be, what sorts of insights can you share for families that who have relatives that are deployed, or maybe they're going to be deployed for the first time, to maybe help them to kind of cope in advance or cope through the uncertainty, the anxiety that you and other members of your organization experienced, 14, 15 years ago?
Well, I'll tell you, I've kind of become hardcore over the years. I think it's the Marine Corps in me. And this is something I do tell our parents. I tell them, I said, when your child deploys or your loved one deploys, I said, this is the time in your life that you have to be the most unselfish you have ever been. You cannot think about yourself. You can't think about and rely to them how much you're going to miss them and how much it's going to hurt and how hard it's going to be. You really have to step back and you have to just think about what and how they need to get their mind together to be able to go and do what they need to do. That was one of the best things my son ever taught me. He was, Mom, you can miss me, but you can't put that heavy on me. I've got too much I have to care about and take care of over there. And if I'm worried about you, I can't do what I need to do. And those are the things that I try to tell them. That's what we're here for. We're here to fill that gap. You want to cry. You want to be distraught. You need answers to your questions. Come to us and let us help. We have the years and we have the knowledge and we have the contacts to be able to help you in almost every situation. But putting that heavy on someone who is deploying, getting ready to deploy, or is already over there just makes matters worse. And that's one of the biggest things I try to convey, especially to the parents and the loved ones. And a lot of times, once they can get it out to us and they can express their anxieties and their just their feelings and everything that goes with it, there begins to be some calmness. And as the days go by a little more, I mean, it's never easy. There's never a day that doesn't go by that you're not going to be worried. But there's a way to learn to cope, to be involved. And that's one of the other things we tell them, find something to do, get involved, keep yourself busy, and know that there are many, many resources out there available, not just ours. There's many resources out there for any family member, any veteran, anything that you want. It's out there. You can find it, and you have to take the time or reach out to us so that we can help you find what you need in whatever situation you're dealing with during that deployment time.
Oh, that's great. Great advice.
That was well said, by the way.
And it really reminds me of my own experience when I was, as I said earlier, when I was on active duty during the first Gulf War. And although I later went to Saudi Arabia for a short time in 1992 during the war itself, I was back home at the installation, and I was working the legal office, and it was our job as a service organization to help family members, to the extent we were able to, with legal problems. And there are other, as you suggested, there are a lot of other organizations. There was Family Support Center. There were other charities to help with financial emergencies. But the key is, commanders and the troops that are deployed are counting on the people back home to help out the families get through it. And it's not always easy, and problems may slip through the cracks sometimes, but it's really important, and it's for the reason that you said, which is those troops that are deployed, they've got enough stress going on with whatever their mission is. They don't need to be worried that back home there are all sorts of problems, that their family's not able to get help, that sort of thing. So I think your organization is doing, a really great service. Richard, I think you have some more questions.
Yeah, I know you've told us a lot about what projects you've done in the past. You have a project coming up on October 29th, I believe, you want to tell us about.
Yes, we're gearing up for our 9th annual Run for the Fallen event. It is a free memorial event offered to the community. We based it off of, my daughter actually started it. her brother, when he was serving in Iraq, lost his two best friends about 2 weeks before he himself was injured. And we knew the boys, and they were like family, and it weighed really heavy on my daughter. And she read about the National Run for the Fallen event back then, and they were asking people to just in their own cities to run miles to help them accumulate enough miles to cover for each of the military that had been killed in action during the war at that time. And so she came to me and she goes, Mom, she goes, I know that we could put something together, but it's in 2 weeks. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And she's like, no, but we can do it. So we rallied together, and we were trying to figure out what would engage the people. What was it going to be? Not just bring them out to do a walk. We needed something that was going to catch their attention and make it stick. And so we thought, how many from Florida have we lost in this war so far? And at the time, I think there was about 158. And so I said, okay, let's do this. Let's see if we can just get enough people to come out so that one person will walk for each of our Florida fallen. And she said, okay, let's do it. So we just started pounding the emails. It wasn't a big Facebook premise back then, but she was on it enough. And we just started getting the word out. And we contacted the reserve unit here in Tampa and the MacDill, and we shared it with them. And the reserve unit said that they would bring out a group of guys to run. My son came down, and he said that he would lead it. And he mapped it all out at a local veterans park for us, and we just had a 1 miler, and we just invited people, and we made our signs on bed sheets, we spray painted on bed sheets, and it was just like a big kind of picnic, kind of come together deal. There was nothing well organized about it. We only had one Gold Star mother at the time who attended, but we were happy to have her. And we had the event, and we had nearly 200 people there. It was amazing, and they just embraced the event tremendously. And so we said, okay, well, maybe we'll do it again next year. And we just kept doing it, and every year it just kept growing and growing and growing. The only problem was we kept growing out of our venues, and the problem was that because we hold the event completely free, that we couldn't really afford, you know, a huge venue like we needed. So unfortunately, last year we had to postpone our event because we just couldn't find anything. But we're very happy that we found a venue this year, and we're back on the road to recovery, and we're kind of having to rebuild. So we're not at those big, huge numbers we had year before last, but we're very happy in the registration so far. We've got over 150 Gold Star family members coming out, and that's our main goal. And we're going to offer them an amazing day honoring their heroes. We offer a 1 mile walker run and a 5 and 10K. We have all kinds of extra activities going on during the day. And our pristine is we have a Florida Fallen Memorial that has a cross that represents every Florida member who's been killed in action in operations Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And they have a memorial set, a beautiful memorial that we set up for them that can be viewed during the day. And what we ask is that each runner walker will get a bib, and on that bib will be a picture of Florida Fallen. And what we ask them to do is find the cross and to match it up, and then we ask them to go home and research that veteran and his family and to get to know them. And that's part of our mission, that they educate themselves about the sacrifices that are being made daily for our country and what is represented at the event.
Wow,
that's really
great.
Awesome. How does someone get hooked up and join you on the 29th?
You can go to Eventbrite on the web, and you just put in Run for the Fallen, and you can go ahead and register. You can also go to our marinefamilies.org website, and you'll see right on the front page, there's a place where you can click for registration. There's also a page that can tell you all about the event with the history and some of our past videos and stuff, so you can see just what it's all about. You can come out, you can participate, you can come out, you can volunteer. You just be a spectator. We just ask that you just come out and support the Gold Star families. And what we've done as an organization is we've promised them that we will never let their sons and daughters be forgotten. And so this is our way annually. We do it all year long, but this is our big way annually to show them, you know, the support in the community, and that we do remember, and that we're not going to let the sacrifices that they've been through and that they continue to go through ever be forgotten, as long as Marine Families is around and can do it.
Well, that's great, and it's called Remember Our Fallen. Now, Sid, where exactly is it geographically this year?
Okay, it has been moved from Tampa, and we're holding it up in Dade City at a very popular running spot called Little Everglades Ranch. And all the information, again, is on our website, but it's in Dade City. It's a beautiful, it's a working cattle ranch, so it offers some unique experience this year. But it's a beautiful setting, and we have plenty of room to grow, and we're really excited at the possibilities of what we have in store in the next years to come, and we'll be able to offer for this event and for the families.
So I understand it's then Sunday, October 29th, and for those that perhaps aren't able to register online, can they register that morning? Can they just show up and participate?
Absolutely. You can show up and participate. That's not a problem. And also, we have many people all over the country who like to participate, as they call, virtually. So they can go online and they can register, and then at home or wherever they're at, they can run their miles, and that way they're logged in. And if they like, we can send them a bib, so they have a bib. They can order a shirt online if they'd like to support it. Like I said, there is no fee for registration. The way we raise funds really is through our sponsors and donors, and then we have a shirt every year that each year we nobody knows what the color of the shirt's going to be, nobody knows what the quote is going to be, and we search all year to find really good quotes to put on the back of the shirts that have something to do with our fallen, and those shirts are offered for sale, and they're given free, of course, to all of Gold Star family members. And so everyone looks forward to, we used to have a man who would be there at the crack of dawn because he wanted to get his shirt, because he had a shirt from every event. So we really try to make them special, and we don't allow any sponsorship on the shirt. The shirt is solely to be in memory and honor of the fallen. So it's not like it's plastered with a bunch of logos or anything like that. It is for the honor and respect of what the event is all about.
I see. And so people could show up that morning if they haven't registered already online. What time does the event officially begin, the opening ceremony, if you will? What time does that start this Sunday?
The opening ceremony is at 9, but registration will open at 8, and it'll close, at 7, I'm sorry, and close at 8:30, and then we promptly start the opening ceremony at 9 a.m. As soon as the ceremony is over, which takes about 30 minutes, then we go ahead right into the run and the walk. And after those events are done, then, like I said, we have vendors and we have food trucks. And we have, this year we've brought out the Marine Corps EMV semi-trailer that has a simulator in it and all kinds of things. And many of our sponsors will be out there. We've offered, we had an anonymous donor who gave us the funds so that we could sponsor 5 veteran groups to set up and share their information with everyone there, and we'll have some nice groups there. So it's going to be we try to make it a family event, and the reason we keep it free is because we know that many of our veterans and military families are on a really tight budget, and so you may want to come out and walk for your buddy that you serve with that you lost, but you can't bring your wife and 3 kids when you're paying $30 or $40 for a registration fee. But you can if it's free, and that's the way that our board says we're going to keep it, and I love that fact. I love our board for that, because we're thankful that we've been able to do it over the years, and we're looking forward to being able to continue to keep it that way, because it allows whole families to come out. And again, I go back to our mission about educating. We've had children that have grown up from being carried in their parents' arms, and now they're 5 and 6 and 7 years old, and they have progressive pictures next to the crosses and stuff, and those children are learning from the very beginning what it means to honor and remember and respect the sacrifices made for this nation.
Yes, and sometimes it's even hard to maybe fully appreciate, but that our country has continuously been at war for the last 16 years. It's a better part of an entire generation now we've been at war. So I think it's a wonderful thing, as you said, that we want to remember our fallen, the sacrifices by our troops and by their families as well. Now, you said sponsorships are available, donations are appreciated. How can our listeners participate in that way as far as sponsoring and making donations? How can they do that?
You can go online. You can mail in checks on our website. We have many different ways that you can support the organization as a whole or the event. And many times, the other great things are in-kind donations. We have a whole list of wish list things, water, supplies, all kinds of things. So there's many ways to help out. And if anyone wants to talk to us or contact us directly, one of our key volunteers would be more than happy to speak with them or email back and forth with them about specifics on any of that.
Okay, great. And your website, again, is marinefamilies.org. Is that right? Marinefamilies.org.
Correct.
Okay, good. Any other contact points or ways that our listeners, I know they can go to that website. Any other options if you wanted to offer those?
If you'd like to follow us on Facebook, we're just under Marine Families. We have a great page, and you can follow us there. We also have a Run for the Fallen Tampa Bay page that they can follow us on Facebook.
Oh, great. Yeah, social media is an excellent way to get the word out. So we thank you so much. Anything else you'd like to share with us, Sid, about the organization or maybe the October 29th event that we haven't asked you about already?
I don't think so. I appreciate it so much. I want to thank everybody out there for the support that they do give the military. I'd like to thank you, gentlemen, for what you do. It's so important. Like I said, my husband's a Vietnam veteran. My son's a Iraq veteran. Doing this is the very least I can do to give back for everything that has been done for us. When our son was injured, the people who rallied around us and the support that we had, I can't even begin to explain. And so for me, giving back time and time again will never repay for all that. So I personally would just like to thank you guys, because it's a wonderful thing that you do, giving of your time and your service and for your service in the past. And that's, what we're founded on. That's what this Marine Families is all about. And I appreciate everything you guys are doing. And if we can ever be of any assistance, you know how to get a hold of me.
We'll do it. How's your son doing? You said he was wounded in Iraq. He served in the
Yes.
Marine Corps. How is he doing now?
He's doing wonderfully. He was injured back in 2006, so it's been a while, but he is doing fantastic. In fact, I got a text from him yesterday, and he's an aviation mechanic in Jacksonville, Florida, at one of the naval bases now, and he just got a big promotion, got married this year, and so he's doing wonderfully. Thank you very much.
Oh, congratulations on all those.
Super.
Send them our regards, and thank you for all you do with Marine Families as a founder and the executive director, and thank you, your husband and your son, for their service to our country. And we wish you the best success in all the projects your organization has, especially this big event coming up this Sunday the 29th, which as you said, will be at the Little Everglades Ranch in Dade City, Florida. That's just north of Tampa. And listeners can go to marinefamilies.org and also on Facebook for Marine Families. So thank you very much, Sid, and I hope you have a good evening, and good luck this Sunday.
Thank you guys, too. Good night now.
Good night.
Thanks, Sid.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
That was very good, David. Yeah, that was great.
Well,
thank you so much for being on our show and sharing with us.
Hey, David, maybe you should go out there and give it a run. Give it a run on Sunday.
Yeah, maybe I should. I should have asked if they allow people to drive their cars. that the well, no,
they might have they might have a golf cart for you, David.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. But on a serious note, just want to remind our listeners, the event is called Remember Our Fallen, and as Sid Deeth mentioned, that it's not limited to people that are just in the Tampa Bay area. You can actually participate virtually by participating in a run or a walk in your area, but linking up with them through the internet and getting a T-shirt and being recognized as participating in the event. But it's Remember Our Fallen. It's this Sunday, October the 29th. You can register online at marinefamilies.org, and you can register that morning starting at 7 a.m. The opening ceremony is at 9 a.m. They have a 10K, a 5K, and a one-mile run and walks, and they have a memorial ceremony and lots of other events as well. So it's a great cause.
Should be a good cause. Should be a good time out there in Dade City. Hey, David, yeah. Why don't you tell our guests about our Burn Pit documentary that's coming up? I know we're looking forward to November the 1st.
Yeah, I had the opportunity this past week to see the Burn Pit documentary. It's called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. Our listeners may recall on our September the 11th show, one of our guests that evening was film director and producer Greg Lovett, and he, after reading a book about the burn pits, he produced and directed this film. It took him a little over a year to do that. And the film reflects the research, a lot of interviews as well. But the film basically deals with the important issue of open burn pits that were commonly used in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and which now are suspected of causing large numbers of our veterans to suffer very serious health problems due to numerous toxic substances that were incinerated in those huge burn pits. And by huge, I mean at some of the bases, they were the size of about 10 football fields, and they were burning 24 hours a day, every conceivable type of garbage, if you will, toxic substances included, were going up, and they were being incinerated with aviation fuel to ignite them, which itself released toxic substances. If you want to find out more about this film, see if it's screening in your area, check it out on Facebook. On Facebook, type in the words Burn Pit Documentary. The premiere showing was October the 9th in Los Angeles, and there have been screenings in a number of cities around the country since then. I saw the film this past Thursday in Tampa, and I'm also one of the promoters of the November 1st screening in Brandon, Florida. That'll be Wednesday, November the 1st. There are still tickets available. I have a few free tickets. If anyone would like some, give me a call at, here's my phone number, grab a pen and paper if you would. It's phone number is 813-662-0760, and I'll repeat it slowly now, 813-662-0760, if you're interested in the Brandon, Florida screening. But there are other screenings planned for cities including New York City, Colorado Springs, Columbus, Ohio, Watertown, New York, and many other places. The unique thing about this film, it's a documentary, and it's being shown at cities based on crowdfunding, which means they have to sell a certain minimum number of tickets before the theater will commit to screening it. And to find out if it's going to be shown in your area, as I said, you can go to the Facebook page, type in Burn Pit Documentary, or you can go to the website tug.com, and that's spelled T-U-G-G.com, tug.com. And then it'll ask you for your town or zip code. Type that in, and you'll see if it's playing in your area. Or you can look for the film. It's called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, and you can see where it's being screened to see if it's in your vicinity. You can order tickets online at tug.com. So it's an excellent film, very informative, and I encourage our listeners to get a chance, particularly if they know someone that served, or if you did serve in Iraq and Afghanistan, maybe of interest. So back over to you, Rick.
Well, jumping ahead to next week and really excited about Monday, October the 30th, when our special guest will be internationally acclaimed and award-winning filmmaker Rick Burns, who will talk about his soon-to-be-released documentary entitled VA, The Human Costs of War. The film is due to be shown on Monday, November the 6th on PBS. Rick has produced a lot of military films. His brother, Ken Burns, many of you know, has produced the Civil War film and the New York film. So the Burns brothers are quite the documentary producers. And so we're really looking forward to that interview, and I'm really looking forward to seeing his documentary about the VA, because I don't really think, and David, you may know this better than I would, that there's really been a good film, good documentary that gets into the nuts and bolts about the VA, the good stuff, the bad stuff, you know, going all the way back to 1921 with Charlie Ford. I mean, there's a lot of hidden skeletons that hopefully Mr. Burns is going to uncover. So we're looking forward to the interview and looking forward to his film. What else, David?
Well, looking ahead on to the week after that, on November 6th, our guest will be Vietnam veteran Brian Wizard, who, by the way, is also an accomplished writer, artist, and filmmaker. On November 6th, he'll be on our show to discuss his experiences in Vietnam and his life since the war, and how he has coped with post-traumatic stress with writing, art, music, and film. He appeared on our show back in May, but we'll be back on November 6th to continue where we left off. Meanwhile, you can check out his website, which is brianwizard.com. Brianwizard.com. He has lots of books and artwork for sale, including books such as his electronic or e-book entitled Smoke Ships, Always Leading the Way. Brian was a door gunner on a helicopter, which they called a smoke ship because it would lay out a screen of smoke as the helicopters would fly into a landing zone or when they would leave from a pickup zone. The smoke, obviously, that the purpose being to shield them from the view of the enemy. It was a pretty dangerous job. Brian has recently compiled what he calls the Brian Wizard's 21st Century Digital Vietnam War Anthology, which includes four books and a video for the greatly discounted cost of only $10 for the entire anthology. So check it out, brianwizard.com. May want to do that before the November 6th show so you can have the benefit of seeing those and seeing his films and reading his books before the show. He'll be talking about his experience as a door gunner and also, as I said earlier, his life after the war, including filmmaking, writing, and other artwork. So we hope our listeners will be sure to tune in those weeks as well as every Monday. On that note, if you have a topic that you'd like to hear more about, or if a particular guest to suggest to us, or if you'd like to be a guest on our show, please let us know. You have that invitation, and our contact information, including our phone numbers and email addresses, are available on our show's website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. That's bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. Okay, back over to you, Richard.
You know, David, talking about Brian Wizard, wasn't Brian the one in his film when they swooped down and grabbed the flag, the North Vietnamese flag?
Yeah, they used to, he was a door gunner, so he would literally sit right at the opening with his machine gun, but there were times when they would spot the Viet Cong or North Vietnamese flag flying over an encampment, and they would fly over first and shoot the place up, and then they fly by slow enough for Brian to reach out and literally grab the flag off of whatever pole or tree it was tied to. And, of course, because he knew back then people might not believe these war stories, he actually caught some of those on home video camera, so you can actually see that happening, believe it or not. So.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. I remember watching the film and seeing him do that. I mean, I did some crazy stuff when I was a kid, but that was pretty wild stuff to swoop down and grab that flag, you know, because they're not high off the ground. I mean, they're rooftop when he grabbed that one flag, the one I remember.
Yeah, and they got to slow down enough that they would be a sitting duck if the enemy. But it's crazy stuff that happens in war, and it was a way for them to, you know, kind of relieve some of the stress. You know, we're talking, you know, he was over there, I think, 19 years old. And, you know, it was a pretty tough way to spend a year over in Vietnam, you know, when you're 19, 20 years old. But any event, should be a good show. I hope our listeners will mark their calendar and tune in. So we have some news for veterans. Rick, why don't we go to our news?
Yeah, sure. Regarding the issue of reforming and improving the VA healthcare system, the next month should bring more activity in Washington as Congress, the Department of Veteran Affairs, and Veterans Service Organization address the details of a plan that not only will replace the Veterans Choice Program, but will supposedly enable the VA to modernize large parts of its healthcare system. The plan, which the VA has entitled the Veterans Care, which stands for Coordinated Access and Rewarding Experiences Act, was unveiled last week and has an overall structure that most major veteran groups applaud, in part because they helped shape it. They don't like everything in it, though, and the House and Senate Veteran Affairs Committees are expected to offer their own replacement plans for the choice program very soon, perhaps to include more safeguards and more details to improve access to care that veteran groups are not addressed yet in the VA plan. As a sign of controversy, some officials from the largest federal workers union have slammed the plan as a total dismantling of the department that would jeopardize veteran services. J. David Cox, Sr., national president of the American Federation of Government Employees, was quoted in a Military Times article as saying, "It's taking resources out of VA and shifting them into the private sector. It's voucherizing veterans' health care." No doubt veterans will want to follow this story as events unfold in Washington over the next month. How about some other news, David?
Yeah, that's a big issue. In other VA health news, on October the 12th, the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, Chairman Phil Rowe of Tennessee, along with House Republican Conference Chair Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington State, and Congressman Bruce Prelequin of Maine, they introduced the Ethical Patient Care for Veterans Act of 2017, which is legislation designed to stop the VA from shielding incompetent doctors. According to a committee press release this past week, this legislation requires Department of Veterans Affairs medical professionals to report directly to state licensing boards if they witness unacceptable or unethical behavior from other medical professionals at the VA. This legislation is in response to a recent USA Today article that revealed the VA failed to disclose bad medical practitioners to the public, thereby risking the public's exposure and the veterans' exposures to bad medical care. Also, according to the committee press release, quote, "The findings of the USA Today investigation are intolerable, said Chairman Rowe. The committee has long been concerned about VA's settlement agreements. It even held a hearing on the topic last year. Chairman Rose said, and I quote, "While I can appreciate VA's recent decision to more closely vet settlement agreements, malfeasance within the department will not be ignored. It certainly cannot be rewarded and hidden from state licensing boards. As a physician, I find this deeply troubling, and I thank Representatives McMorris, Rogers, and Pelequin for their leadership on this issue." That's another important issue to follow. Richard, the events that you described will touch on the issue of access to VA care, and then this legislation focusing in part on the issue of quality. Currently, if the VA receives a report of substandard health care practices, it takes at least 100 days to decide whether to refer the matter to a state licensing board. And this legislation, which was proposed, if it's passed, will require timely reporting to state licensing boards so there is proper notice of serious allegations. So back over to you, Richard.
Okay, David, I know we're getting close to signing off for the evening, but let's talk about VA's Coaching into Care program. If you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call, toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they don't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Yes, and before we wrap up, I would like to provide one more reminder, and thanks to our special guest, Ms. Sid Deeth, the founder and executive director of a group called Marine Families based in Tampa, Florida, but with a national, even global impact. They're having a special event this Sunday, October the 29th. It's called Remember Our Fallen. It includes a memorial service, but also a commemorative run and walk, and as well as many other activities. It'll be located at the Little Everglades Ranch in Dade City, Florida, just north of Tampa. If you're interested, more information can be found at the website marinefamilies.org or on Facebook, just search for Marine Families, and you should find more information. So it's a great event, and it's also a great organization. We thank her very much for being our special guest on tonight's show. It's been another quick hour. As we wrap up, I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on VBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our regular show sponsors, including American Legion Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans and disability cases involving the VA and military personnel actions for those on active duty and in the Guard and Reserves. You can find out more about the law firm at the website CoreyandHurleyLawGroup.com. We'd also like to thank our producer here at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for the great job he does every week for us. We'd also invite our listeners to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Our contact information is on our show's website, which is bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. Where you can also find archived podcasts of our prior shows for your listening benefit. So we hope you will tune in next week, the same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.